Welcome to episode 154 of The Digital Life, a show about our adventures in the world of design and technology. I'm your host, John Follett, and with me is founder and co-host, Dirk Niemeyer.
Hidey-ho, John.
Hidey-ho, Dirk. For our podcast today, we're going to discuss the intersection of biology and information technology, specific around using DNA to encode data for storage purposes, for long-term storage. And this is an idea that has been around for a while. The first research papers published on it about 4 years ago.
Boy, and 4 years ago is a while. It showed you how time passes quickly nowadays, huh?
Well, I'm sure the idea predates some of the techniques that were published at the time. I'm thinking of a paper by George Church and his collaborators that more or less sort of proved that you could do this, that you could take digital data and encode it in DNA strands and retrieve that data, which is sort of the critical part. But before we get into that and some of the news that came out last week, I wanted to break down the problem itself, which is, you know, this increase in information and data, which we, you know, seem to be generating quite a bit of now that we're all online and living our digital lives. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fascinating in particular because we don't think about the storage media that we're committing our information to very much. In fact, we think about it not at all. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, you and I maybe remember the floppy disk, which is now nothing more than an icon to the millennials. But that was a physical thing that you slotted into the computer, and you were thrilled if you could store a few K of material on there. And of course, storage has grown exponentially since then, and now we have gigabytes of storage that can fit on our the key fob or what have you. But even more important, there's information, you know, sort of cultural treasures that reside all over the place that are just getting lost on a daily basis because we can't frankly store them. There's tons of information at the National Archives that are on things like recordings on these audio tubes, right? These old forms of recording that are falling apart, that are decaying as fast as the archivists can get these transfers done. I have a box of family films, right, all on the Super 8, right, that were retrieved from attics as, you know, my parents have, you know, moved out of their house, and my wife's mom moved out of her house. And so now we have boxes of Super 8. And all of this gets, you know, needs to get transferred into another storage media, which will once again decay over a certain amount of time.
Like, that transfer is going to be expensive, buddy.
Oh, sure. And it's just this deluge of information. So, and you can think about it, every family that had those family films, every piece of, you know, cultural material, whether it was worth saving or not, and sitting in the National Archives from the 1900s, right? There's all this human information that needs to be stored, needs to be retrieved at some point.
A lot of it probably just needs to be destroyed, frankly.
Well, yes. I mean, perhaps that would apply to my family films.
I wasn't referring to family films necessarily, but
sure. Yeah. And I mean, there's jazz recordings. There's cool stuff that the National Archives has. But the point is that there's this growing amount of informational stuff, right? That some of it we want to save, and some of it's just, you know, should go away. But the DNA storage seems to be a way to archive in a very small space. You know, it's encoding into synthetic DNA, and of all people or of all companies, Microsoft is starting to show leadership in this area. They've hooked up.
Wait, Microsoft and show leadership. I'm not sure if they should be the same paragraph.
I don't know either. It's shocking. Their new CEO is, you know, taking the reins here on some emerging technology, you know, items and pushing forward, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's happening in the world anymore. But so Microsoft is hooked up with a San Francisco company called Twist Bioscience, and they've agreed to buy, you know, millions of strands of DNA from Twist Bioscience, and they're going to be using it for research, essentially for information storage and retrieval. Now, as you might expect, the information retrieval part is not—it's not like read-write really fast, like on your computer. This is long-term storage that we're talking about. But we're basically going from, you know, you think of the cassette tapes, the Super 8, the CD, even the key fobs. Like, these things are, you know, will last decades if you're lucky, and they will decay. Whereas DNA, you know, it's possible if you keep it in the right environment, it's going to last thousands of years. So the theory is that this storage, if you can make it commercially viable, is going to be more or less apocalypse proof. And
let's step back.
Let's do that.
So you just said that the DNA as a storage medium will last for thousands of years.
In theory.
However, earlier you used the phrase synthetic DNA. So Are we talking about the little ladders in our body here when we talk about DNA storage, or are we talking about something completely different and man-made?
So when we talk about synthetic biology, we're talking about DNA that's synthesized using all of the same chemical components as what is stored in our body, but it's used for, you know, different purposes. In this case, the encoding, you know, is using all the, like I said, all the same chemicals, but specifically done so that it can be used to store digital information. So it's not meant to create living, living beings like an animal or a microorganism or a human being. It's just using the coding technique per se to create this information storage paradigm.
Okay.
And so as I was saying, in theory, we're talking about something that's apocalypse-proof. So when we all decide that we're so stratified in this nation, and we all, you know, it comes to blows and whatever, the generations down the road can go and find our DNA storage of, you know, these terabytes and petabytes of information and take a look at what 21st century America looked like.
So, yeah, because after the apocalypse, they're going to be really interested in people's WordPress pages saved on DNA.
Exactly.
It's all a little silly.
It is. And it is silly if you think about the detritus of our, you know, information technology. But at the same time, there also is, you know, some wonderful stuff that I'm sure is being produced. You know, maybe not by me, but there's valuable stuff to save from this. From this century, for sure. I love observing the bio-inspired technologies and information technologies becoming intertwined here. And and I think it's really fascinating that the storage media that we're talking about today is not just bio-inspired. That's the code of life. You know, that's DNA. So this is the most useful pattern for storing information that we see right now. You know, whether or not that will change, you know, in the future, I don't know. But there's this sense that Mother Nature kind of did it right. Like the design patterns resident in biology are, you know, becoming accessible to humankind for a variety of reasons. And of course, we're seeing, you know, sort of the tip of the iceberg here with the way that we can potentially use DNA to store things. But bio-inspired technology is very slowly, you know, you can see it slowly start to creep into areas that we only thought that, you know, silicon chips and, you know, pieces of plastic were the way we're going to go. Now we're going into the organic realm. And that
the
to me,
synthetic organic realm,
right? And that to me is really mind blowing. I've spoken a lot on this so far, Dirk. I mean, I can tell some of it you think is silly, some not. What's your take?
I mean, I just think in the context of what we're talking about, some of it is silly, but it's actually all very interesting and very inspiring. I mean, the life sciences are in the midst of this revolution, this renaissance, this blossoming. I mean, it's basically accepted that, you know, we've learned more about the human animal in the last 10 years than we did in the whole previous history of humanity, which, if you think about it, is totally freaking incredible, right? And that wealth of information that is coming to us so quickly, that wealth of knowledge, is dovetailing directly into the digital technologies that have been, you know, proceeding for decades now, and it's all becoming sort of commercializable, real world functioning forms instead of A, the sciences being much more rudimentary, but B, the sciences being trapped in the university and in the lab. They're being infused to the front line of companies and products, and that's going to only accelerate in the years ahead. So I actually think it's all very exciting and inspiring, but in the context of like long-term digital storage, I just think most of the crap already being stored is nonsense, you know, so...
That's right.
But I do think, in general, the trend that is pulling together bioscience with digital technology is really awe-inspiring.
Yeah, I think you raised a good point there about commercialization, which is that, you know, there's this delta between when we hear about these scientific discoveries and, you know, when they become commercially viable. There is no immediate product that you can go out and purchase. I suppose if you were extremely clever, you could encode some piece of, you know, digital information in DNA and go and get that synthesized. There's certainly DNA synthesis that's, you know, available to labs and things like that. So I imagine that you could pull that off, but you're not going to be storing your family photos, you know, in the next year or two. You're not going to be storing family photos in a little vial of, you know, DNA sitting on your desk for
Bill Gates might.
Yeah. Someone like that might. It is interesting to think that, you know, we have these, you know, artificial computing devices, these, you know, I'm using artificial or manufactured or industrial, you know, generated products. And as we start looking more towards biology as providing some of the patterns for inspiration, you know, I mean, there's these ideas of organic pieces becoming, you know, the computing, the information storage, the, you know, the generators of materials, even. Using bugs, for instance, to generate biodegradable plastic. So all of the industrial sort of revolution is moving aside towards, you know, this bio revolution that we're privileged enough to see unfolding. And I know it's not happening tomorrow, but you can sense it coming on the horizon. And I think it's going to be just as transformative, if not more, than, you know, the industrial revolutions and information revolutions.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. I mean, the question is just where to draw the lines around the revolutions, you know, is this a discrete biological revolution? Is it discretely different than the information revolution, the digital revolution, or where to draw those macro lines? I'm not sure about, but I think without question, what's going to happen in the decades ahead will more change the landscape of humanity than even the Industrial Revolution itself, which is pretty humbling.
Yeah, that's you know, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about this and to watch it unfold. That's for sure, and maybe to learn a little bit about how to leverage these technologies as they come around. Because I mean, it is important to remember that, you know, at the core of the show there is the design. You know, the focus on design and that these emerging technologies need design. You know, this is part of our perspective in that the technology is wonderful, but the human use of that technology is important as well. And all of these emerging technologies very much need the human interaction component, you know, the design component. Yeah.
For now.
Yeah, until AI takes our jobs. Listeners, remember that while you're listening to the show, you can follow around along with the things that we're mentioning here in real time. Just head over to thedigitallife.com. That's just one L in the digital life, and go to the page for this episode. We've included links to pretty much everything mentioned by everybody, so it's a rich information resource to take advantage of while you're listening, or afterward if you're trying to remember something that you liked. And if you want to follow us outside of the show, you can follow me on Twitter at John Follett. That's J-O-N-F-O-L-L-E-T-T. And, of course, the whole show is brought to you by Involution Studios, which you can check out at goinvo.com. That's G-O-I-N-V-O.com. Dirk?
You can follow me on Twitter at D. Niemeyer. That's at D-K-N-E-M-E-Y-E-R. Or email me, Dirk, at goinvo.com.
So that's it for episode 154 of The Digital Life. For Dirk Niemeyer, I'm John Follett. And we'll see you next time.